reflects in the politics of dancing, or as I like to put it, the dancing of politics. Hi, this is Charles, democraticfundamentalism.org. How are you? We're actually going to have some fun tonight. You know, I had no sooner finished writing the column for the night when I looked up and saw Peter Gabriel on Larry King Weekend. I've got everything Peter Gabriel and Genesis ever did, including a mint copy of the LP Genesis to Revelations, of all things. Anyway, Peter Gabriel sang a really great song in memory of the victims and survivors of 9-1-1. It's called I Grieve, and I don't have the info on it now, but I just wanted to bring it up. Keep an eye out for that one. It's really beautiful. Condolences to the family and friends of Johnny Unitas, who passed away this week. He was one of the greatest quarterbacks who ever was, and a good person, too. You know, I was sitting here thinking of how to start all of this tonight, and then I noticed an article. It was critical of the Democrats in Florida, who supposedly couldn't get the polls open and operate the voting equipment, causing the fiasco that occurred because of the apparent loss of votes. I mean, the actual loss. They lost the votes. Anyway, people being turned away from the polls, all of it happening in the same places as it happened in election 2000. This sounds familiar, doesn't it? Anyway, and then making Janet Reno, of all people, out to be laughable for expecting the state to recount the votes, telling her that if the precincts find any more votes, they can add them to the count. Just find it really odd that even Jeb Bush would make it out that the proper conduct of an election has anything to do with party affiliation. Personally, I don't care who they are, Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Green Party. It doesn't matter if they're incompetent, they should be fired or reassigned. One is bad enough, two in a row is, what's the word? Unacceptable. Yeah, unacceptable. That's the word. From the New York Times, Maureen Dowd. I've sent her a couple of interesting emails over the past 6 months. Anyway, her article, her editorial today, which we have a link to on New York Times, W's Conflicts of Interest, and this is just an excerpt. It says, the Bushes love doing things in secret and without a lot of meddling from know-nothings in Congress and smart alecks in the press. In peacetime, such macho behavior comes across as high-handed. But in wartime, it looks like strong leadership. Critics of a warrior president risk seeming unpatriotic. The Democrats are shackled. A majority voted against the Persian Gulf War in 1991. After it went off with the detachment of a video game, they were pilloried. Now they fear that if they approach Desert Storm 2 the same way, raising objections about motives, casualties, costs, or the post-war strategy, they will be portrayed as McGovernite wimps. For those who don't know who is being referred to, Senator McGovern was a presidential candidate in the Vietnam War days, who had a vision of peace, justice, honoring the God-granted dignity of the human spirit in every person, and respecting living and natural things on this planet. That's a truly worthy vision. And see, our legislators, I talk about them a lot, but, you know, I really don't believe they're bad at all. They ran for office with the intention of honorably serving this country and doing good for the world, just like people in the media. That's the real reason they actually decided to do what they do, just like you do when you do the things you love most. They're put in a tough position by the need to raise huge sums of money to finance campaigns, and you can't blame all of that on them. After all, we as citizens allow a system like that to exist, and it's our apathy that has allowed advertising tricks to replace discussion of the real issues and remedies of our times. And then people wonder why the international community doesn't just line up behind the government of the United States. That's what the real scourge of propaganda is. It's like a molestation of the mind. Quick note, congratulations to Scott Ritter. What a job he's doing. He was named Person of the Week by Time.com. The headline, once expelled from Baghdad for challenging Saddam, the former weapons inspector returned this week to challenge Bush. I really want to commend him for his courage and willingness to put his expertise and reputation on the line for the cause of conflict resolution and world peace. He really is an example of a statesman we can all learn from. Like I always say about changing the future, all we really have to do is want it. And, you know, it also provides numerous opportunities to have leaders show up as courageous heroes on this planet as we do begin to shape the future. As James Taylor calls it, honoring the kingdom of heaven and the rights of man. I had to give the kid a plug after 30 years. He deserves a shot. Bushism of the moment and a regime that has lost its legitimacy will also lose its power. I like the ring of that. All right, Bushism of the next moment after that, and this really isn't a criticism, but the most interesting thing I find about that speech is in the demand that one country comply with its commitments and resolutions that supposedly bind it. All the while, the United States policy under the Bush administration is to ignore its commitments to the United Nations whenever it darn well pleases. Same with the International Court. And just the time you think, he got him, I'm going to fool you, like usual. The most interesting thing about all of this is the opportunity to, well, if everyone agreed to get together and make a comprehensive list of all the countries and all of the resolutions and agreements that haven't been honored, and not out of spite or vindictiveness, but just as a statement of fact, and then put that on a website, well, you know, we could all get a better picture of the extent to which we all, as citizens of the planet, don't keep our word with each other in one way or another for one reason or another. And, of course, that includes me. We're all just human, after all. Stuff comes up. But after a while, it's like expectations and unfulfilled expectations. After a while, the resentment or frustration builds up, and that frustration expresses itself in some sort of manifestation. Manifestations like, oh, war, broke agreements, lack of communication, thwarted intentions, undelivered communications, leading to a famine, pestilence, AIDS, forest fires, divorce, rape, child abduction, theft, and murder in various forms, religious and racial prejudice, all out of a defensive mechanism designed to protect us from disappointment. I always remember that after my father died when I was 9 or 10, it's always hard for me to remember, but we had to sell the ranchette I grew up on in the mountains of Santa Cruz. Now, I had to give up a bunch of things I was used to, like, well, my horse. So my mom said she'd buy me a new guitar to make up for it. Now, I had a real chunker, but, you know, I was happy with it, and I didn't ask for a new guitar. And the promise of getting that new guitar, though, was really special to me. I mean, I really wanted it. But time went on, and no guitar. And the funny thing was, she made more money off the two sheds my pack rat dad built to hold all the tools and hardware collected over the years. She got more money for them than she did for the house and the acreage. So she'd run out of money. But I wanted the guitar, and at one point I got so frustrated that I remember going out into the car in the driveway and closing the windows and yelling for a few minutes. And I wasn't angry at her. I didn't blame her at all. I just remember thinking I wish she hadn't promised it if she wasn't sure she'd be able to do it. Because I was fine with what I had, and I never would have been frustrated about it if she hadn't brought it up. Well, most of the time, I get more angry that someone would do something that triggers my anger, when most of the time communication of some sort would have taken care of it. Setting realistic expectations would have made everything all right. There are ways of dealing with everything, so long as you know what you can count on or have to do without. I once told the CFO that if he asked me to, I could build him a house, and that even if he only had a nickel to spend, I could find a way to squeeze that nickel so far that it would be the best possible 5-cent house on earth. May not be a very good house, but it would be the best that it could be. Now, after a couple of times of that, he just sort of got out of my way, too. This is the same man who basically created Citibank's automated teller system processes years ago. That's why I keep calling on world leaders to speak their vision, not hatred, not anger, not representing their national pride in order to say the right thing for the world press, but expressing a vision, a real vision, achievable or not. For example, the Palestinians and Israelis. Imagine how constructive it might be if they set the tone of negotiations by declaring thoughts like this at the beginning of meetings. I believe in the possibility of the joyful coexistence of all people on this planet. Children playing freely without concern for safety. Birds and trees and the animals flourishing. And a world of people living healthy and free. It may seem a little idealistic, but that's a vision. I always say if you can identify the goal as a vision of the best possible outcome, the best possible product, then there is the possibility of moving toward that goal step by step or all at once using bottom-up wisdom. It doesn't mean that there won't be problems, disagreements, and miscommunications. It just means that there's some agreement as to what would be best, why it would be best, and the benefits of accomplishing it. George Bush said, "Now is the time to deal with the problem," and I most certainly agree. And the Italian Prime Minister says he has a timetable for Iraq to comply. Here's an interesting question for you. Who actually says they have a right to set that timetable when there is no true urgency? Really, think about that. They are representatives of the people, not the other way around. Certainly they have the authority, so long as the authority is granted and honored. That's what the propaganda war is all about. Forcing the granting of authority. By the way, to other leaders, I can get away with using the word propaganda in this broadcast because people came here to think. But in the press, the word is meaningless. Watch how the Israelis adapt their message to the American audience. That's what the game is about right now. The thing is, I don't see the problem as being what they think it is. I disagree with the ploy to place the blame on the back of the United Nations and Kofi Annan, and to make it out like there isn't an ulterior motive to force the world to bow to the superpower. The United States is pushing for action, not the rest of the world. If the rest of the world is to be considered, then the rest of the world must be allowed to do the work that needs to be done to resolve our grievance with Iraq. To say the U.S. will do it alone anyway means the U.N. is just wasting its time, because the Bush administration doesn't really care what the rest of the world says anyway. At least that's what those kind of remarks mean to me. The game is to blame people who are willing to acknowledge the truth, but the person forcing the confrontations won't acknowledge their own transgressions and uses the other person's confession as a judgment of guilt instead of an expression of taking the first step toward true resolution of a problem. Personally, I think the problem is with each person involved, the nations, the individual citizens of the world, not stating their visions and finding ways to integrate those visions with the visions of others. Ultimately, when we compare notes, it's really easy to see that we all actually want the same basic things. I'll let you think about what those things might be for now. By the way, I want to applaud the leader of the world in every country for showing their restraint and wisdom in the discussion of the issues before us now. To me, it marks the real beginning of the possibility to change the future of this planet, beginning now, step by step, moment by moment, looking in the mirror and laughing at ourselves just a little bit. Speaking of applause, in entertainment, My Big Fat Greek Wedding is a cool picture by someone who, in northern exposure, I would have traded jobs with in a flash. I just can never remember his name. He played Chris Stevens, Sicily, Alaska's only DJ, resident guru, and radio ventriloquist. And I'm sure from time to time he wore sunglasses so he could do his radio program incognito as well. Signs, the movie, is great too, doing well at the box office. That's Mel Gibson. What a great actor. So is Heath Ledger, who co-starred with Mel Gibson in The Patriot, who has another film coming out called Four Feathers. And then, of course, there's Fear.com. Scares me. Meanwhile, since I'm connecting a few dots, The Sopranos is coming up Sunday. Since I like David Chase and Elaine Bracco and Ronnie Van Zant so much, I decided I'd actually try watching the program. I don't do that a lot. most TV, actually. And the final thread of this session of 6 Degrees of Separation is that I'll mention that Ronnie Van Zant is causing a renaissance of rock and roll by having garage bands do old rock and roll and broadcasting it on the radio. And as soon as I find the information, that broadcast will be prominently promoted on this site. Ronnie, I know you wanted to be a singer, but tell me, how much louder could your heart possibly be singing when you do something like this? Back to more serious matters, and in the grand scheme of the absurdity of life, I have this strange concern over what's going on in Egypt. It makes me worried that Pandora's box is going to be opened, and then I'll have one more problem to propose answers to. And so will you. The headline from CNN, Robotic Indiana Jones to Penetrate Pyramid. Rover goes where no man can to unravel Egyptian mystery. It sort of makes me think about Night of the Living Dead and this other movie on pay-per-view at the moment called Resident Evil. I can imagine these scenarios, given all the DNA experimentation and viruses going around these days. All it really takes is one slip of the test tube, you know? UN is sponsoring the Great Apes Survival Project. It's all about gorillas, apes, monkeys, gibbons, you know, the ones that were just recently discovered in Vietnam, about 26 of them in a pack. You know, what if the gorillas and the other animals all decided that we were responsible for destroying the forests and the environment? And because, hey, they feel they have the right to live here too. What if they began harvesting us like a food crop, like we do to them? It's just an interesting thought. But nonetheless, check out this link to the United States GRASP website regarding the survivability of apes and monkeys and gorillas around the world, and how urgent it really is that we become responsible for the environment of this planet, since we exploit it so much. And with that, I think I've probably used up my allotment of words for the day. And you can breathe a little sigh of relief now. I will say thanks for listening. I got a special music mix for you tonight. Accidentally came across this cut. That's just great. But I want you to know I actually feel honored that you'd take the time to listen to my ramblings and opinions. And want to honor you for being willing to consider my ideas as you develop your own ideas and recommit yourselves to what you know in your heart will benefit us all. It's just a conversation I'm trying to create around the world, just, you know, a little thing. Anyway, I'm sure you'll be able to generate even more and better ideas as we all begin to change the future. And that's a wrap. This is Charles, democraticfundamentalism.org. I'll be back on late Monday night. Take care now.